What's up, Subaniacs? Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Ugly Duck podcast. Sean Avery is joining me on the show today, former hockey player, actor, model, advertising executive, podcast host. There's nothing this man won't do, and there's nothing this man won't say. It's going to be a great conversation, so stick around for that and keep up with the comments, reviews, feedback. I'll keep reading them as long as you guys keep writing them. It's awesome. I love doing this, and I love that you guys love that I'm doing it. Don't stop, because every review helps get the podcast out there. Thanks to all of you for your support. It means a ton. I love you guys. Thank you so much. All right, stay right there. We got a great show. Sean Avery will be here in just a few, so don't go away. All right, Mo, before Sean Avery joins us, we're going to take a look at the news around the NHL, all right? So you started off. Let's go. A
lot of hockey to get into here, guys.
Tons of hockey.
Lightning beat one of our favorites to take it all, the Boston Bruins, to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals 4-1 in the series.
Okay, so hold on. I got to come clean. You know, I picked Boston because Zdeno Chara is one of my favorite human beings, one of my favorite players. And the guy is, I think he's 43 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to see him get back to a Stanley Cup final. It's not happening. I think it's pretty clear. Tampa's just too deep. I mean, you got to give credit. Matthew Darche, shout out to Matthew Darche, who's a friend of the show, ex-teammate of mine, and the Tampa Bay organization. The way they built that team, they are deep. Maybe a little too deep for any other team in this league, because I'm looking at their lineup and the way they were just rolling, it was like clockwork. And their young players, Cirelli, Braden Point, have been studs in the playoffs. But the Coleman acquisition, the Goudreau acquisition, I mean, and then they got the big suite on the back end. And Kevin Shattenkirk stepped in. He's played well. I think everything, all the acquisitions that they've made look good. And they're missing Steven Stamkos. So this team looks primed for a long run, and they're going to get some rest now.
They seem to be getting stronger as the playoffs go on as well. Chara, right, becomes a free agent at 43 years old.
Yeah.
You know, after the game, he said, "I haven't made that decision. I obviously just finished the game, and I'm going to be open-minded." Let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he retires. What sort of impact does that have on the Bruins organization moving forward?
Well, first of all, you know what? I sent him a text after the game, you know, just telling him that I hope this isn't the last game, just because I'm a big fan of his. You know, as my career goes on, and every year comes and goes, you know, you realize that, you know, you want to do this for as long as you can. He's 43. I just turned 31. So, I mean, I'd be...
Let's get into that for a second, right? Look, people look at Tom Brady, right? And they think... It was crazy that you have an NFL quarterback playing into his 40s, right?
Dude.
But that position is not as physically demanding
what
as a...
Chara has done in
crazy.
His career in a... Like, listen, and I know that football is a contact sport, but as a quarterback,
It's nowhere near what it is
different.
For hockey players. I agree.
Not only that, the size. You got to take into consideration Chara's size. Like, what is he, 7 feet on... freaking skates, like he's huge, right? So to be able to play in this era of the game where it's more about speed and quickness and skill, and he still manages to be an effective player. And obviously he brings the leadership intangibles. And I mean, listen, I've never played with Z, and I can feel his leadership. Where I really got to meet him and really connect with him was when I did the BEMS Harvard course. Lindsay and I did that. I think it was 2 or 3 summers ago, and Z happened to be there. So we connected for a couple days, and the advice and the wisdom that he's given me since then has been second to none. I mean, you know, I look at two guys that have really been able to influence my career. You know, I look at Chris Pronger and Zdeno Chara, just how long they've been able to play, how they've been able to play for a long time at that high level. He's a Hall of Famer. There's no question in my book. So
I can't imagine the amount of discipline that goes into
he's a monster.
His eating regimen, his workout regimen.
He's a monster. But you know what? He was the first to tell me, don't overtrain. Like, he trains hard, he works hard, but don't overtrain. Recovery, rest is the most important. And, you know, I love to work out. I love to train. I always feel that I got to do more, and sometimes less is more.
Some retirements around the league. Mike Green announces that he's hanging up his skates.
Yeah.
Kind of thoughts on him, his career?
Listen, I think he's the last defenseman to score 30 goals in the NHL. You know, I always look at players as, you know, in their career, you look at their prime. And when I look at when he was on Washington and they had those teams that were just running high every year, scoring a ton of goals, he was a huge part of that team. It says a lot, right? You look at John Carlson in the seasons that he's had playing in Washington with that core group. Well, Mike Green arguably has had, you know, better statistical seasons. Now, you know, I don't think it's on him that they never won a cup while he was there, but he's had a tremendous career. And good for him, man. He should enjoy his retirement. He's got a lot to be happy about.
Big breaking news around the league. Obviously, breaking news as we film this. Jake Allen.
Huge trade.
Dun, 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 dun.
A lot of talk. And you know that Montreal will be talking about it. All the fans in Montreal there will be talking about that. I think it was a third round pick 2020 and a seventh round pick in 2020.
Correct. Yep. From St. Louis to Montreal.
Listen.
Obviously, what impact does that have on Montreal? And does St. Louis get a steal here in the sense that they get two great draft picks?
Well, it's interesting because, listen, I'm not going to try to sit here and play GM because I ain't a GM.
Yeah.
And I've never been one.
Yet.
And, well, listen, I hope.
If you want to be commissioner of the league,
you might want
to be GM.
Yeah,
first.
But hold on. I'm not managing cap space and all this stuff. But I'm telling you, when I look at that trade, it's interesting because, you know, over the past couple of years and since I've left Montreal, you hear a lot of conversations, not just about Montreal, but other teams about whether they're rebuilding or not rebuilding. So it's interesting to see because I don't know what a rebuilding team looks like anymore, right? You look at Carolina, you look at, you know, the Islanders, you look at some of these teams that were quote unquote, when they lost a couple of players were rebuilding are right back into the mix. And I think that, you know, bringing in a guy like Jake Allen obviously takes a lot of the load off of Carey Price. I think that's the primary reason for the trade. I mean, I didn't speak to Mark Bergevin or anybody in that, but looking at it, you bring in a guy like Jake Allen, obviously that relieves Carey Price, especially going into next season, gives him an opportunity to rest a little bit more. But to give up a third round pick and a seventh round pick, I mean, you're only, listen, the future is only going to tell on whether that trade was the right one or not. But Jake Allen, make no doubt about it, is a very good goaltender. And they have two great goaltenders. They got Primo in the minors, who's proven that he can play as well. So, you know, they're stocked in the goaltending category. But whether that's going to help them be a Stanley Cup team or not, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
What are your thoughts on one team having two really good goaltenders as opposed to just one team having one tried and true guy that's there every single game?
Well, the first thing I'll say is this. This is just from me watching, right, is that Jake Allen played in St. Louis for a very, very long time. When I was in Nashville and we beat St. Louis, he played. Biddington came in, took over the number one spot, and he adjusted very, very well to that. Won himself a Stanley Cup because he adjusted it, showed this year that he's still capable of playing in big games and being a goaltender that a team can rely on. So I'm optimistic thinking that he's going to go into Montreal, support Carey Price the right way. And then, you know, if Price can play or can't play, at least you know that you have someone there that can step in and get the job done. So I think that it's a great compliment to Carey Price. The only question is whether giving up a third round pick and a seventh round pick, you got to see what those players look like and what it amounts to be. The draft is very, very, very important now. So giving up picks is not like it used to be where you just throw picks in and it's okay. So you got to look, but you hear more about the Canadians in that they're trying to win now. So we'll see what happens.
Staying on St. Louis, Blues GM Doug Armstrong said 20% of his team had COVID before the bubble, which affected conditioning of their players. Let's talk about that. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, we don't necessarily know what the repercussions are of this disease. It is a respiratory disease. It seems like this had some play into what teams were healthy going into the bubble and what ones had some lingering effects from probably getting this disease.
Listen, I think it's definitely been impactful for the players. I mean, not just for the players that have received it, but, you know, for other players as well. The whole pandemic has been stressful for players. Maybe hadn't allowed players to condition the way they wanted to or get on the ice as soon as possible. But everybody's kind of in a similar place. But for players that contain it, listen, I know a lot of players around the league that had it and were out of the mix. And if you get it at the wrong time, you get it 2 weeks before training camp, you know, now you're going into training camp sitting around for 2 weeks, you're 2 weeks behind, rather than if you got it 2 months before training camp started. So it's timing. You need some luck. And you knew that going into this playoff run, that it was going to come down to the teams that got some bounces and got some luck as well. Teams that were healthy.
Yeah.
That all those things factored in. And I don't think there's any question that anybody watching the playoffs saw that you didn't get the best St. Louis team, right? You got a different version of them that we saw from last year. So I don't expect them to blow everything up and retool the team. I think that you got to give them another opportunity. And I think they're going to be back and better next year. There's no question.
It's so interesting when I hear you talk about the bounces, yeah, right? I didn't realize how much luck sometimes plays into these games, right? Because a guy takes a slap shot. By the time it gets to the goal, it's ricocheted 3-4 times. Mm-hmm. And how does a goalie keep track of something like that in real time?
Listen, there's so much skill in the league now, yeah, too. So you have to account for the bounces, but you also have to account for the skill.
Right.
You know, when I first came into the league, I mean, the skill was usually in only the top two lines. Now all four lines have skill. Now all six defensemen can move pucks and are mobile. So it's a different type of game now, right? It demands more concentration. It demands you to pay more attention to the details. It's way more demanding in a full 60-minute game now than it's ever been, as far as I'm concerned. So the bounces are one thing, but you got to work twice as hard to get those bounces now. And it's just not easy. It's tough on a goaltender. That's why goaltending's very, very important. Yeah.
Do players feel like, are players who are maybe more superstitious, do they feel like there are hockey gods out there? Meaning like, you know, like in poker, right? It's all about getting your cards, right? Do you guys go on the streak where it's like, you know, you might have all these bounces go your way and there's like nothing can stop you from winning? Is there some of that superstition that goes on?
Listen, I also believe that, yes, you got to be on, to win the Stanley Cup, you got to be on a great team. You have to peak at the right time. You have to get the right matchups as well.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you could be playing the first seeded team as a seventh seeded team, but you just match up better against them than anybody else. So there's a lot of things to consider in the playoffs. And, you know, I look at it, I've been on some great teams, gone on some great runs. Sometimes you just need a bounce here or there. Sometimes, yeah, you know, I look at it and, you know, you look at Carolina, they lose Svechnikov. Like, that's just a bounce that, yeah, a team like the Islanders need to see one of their top six players drop out of the playoffs. Like, you know, we play Pittsburgh in the finals and we're without Ryan Johansson, Kevin Fiala, like our top two forwards at the time. So it's like, you know, you need those bounces. You need that luck sometimes to win. And, you know, that's why it's the hardest trophy
to win.
Have
you ever played with a player that had all these kind of superstitious things going on in their locker room? You know, I don't know if you watch Major League ever. Remember Joe Boo and Lemit in Major League? Have you ever had a player that was just
I've seen
that?
A lot. I've seen a lot of superstitious things in the locker room. But, you know, now it's a little bit different. I think that when I first came in, guys were a little bit more superstitious. Uh-huh. You know, you just saw it more. Maybe because I was younger and I was just paying attention more. You're soaking in everything.
Right.
Now, like when I come to the rink, I'm in my own zone. I'm in my own world. I kind of know what I have to do. But there's a ton of superstition. I mean, I saw Victor Hedman once on the bench with his trainer, like putting his stick on the top of his trainer would put his hands on the board like this. And he'd be going like this with his stick. Like, and I'm like, I've never seen anything like that before. But hey, whatever it takes, right?
Whatever it takes.
And he sniped the overtime winner, so he can do whatever he wants before a game.
All right, speaking about some close calls, right? Some last minute victories. We have three remaining series. And this is obviously when we're filming this. We have three remaining series that are 3-2. Obviously, when this launches, some of that may change, right? You know, you have the Islanders and Philly, you have Vegas and Vancouver, and you have Colorado and Dallas, right? Of these three teams right now, where do you see any of these going a game seven if any of these do go?
Oh, well, any of them can go to a game seven. Let's put that out there. There is one series I want to touch on because the other ones, I'll touch on those a little bit, but the Vegas-Vancouver series is very interesting.
Yeah.
I watched the last game. Vancouver looked unbelievable. They looked fast. They looked experienced. They looked like they were just playing hockey. There was no worry in the world. Yeah. That's got to be scary for Vegas.
Well, they came in tired, right, in the first couple games.
Listen to me. Vancouver did not look tired. Vegas looked more tired than anything. And maybe it's just they couldn't get the game going, but I watched towards the end of the game. Like, they waited till the last minute to kind of try to get it going, and I think there might have been a power play, or they pulled their goalie, and then they finally got some zone time. But Vancouver, they looked like they were just – they had spring in their step. There was so much energy. They were playing with pace. They were confident. Like, I don't know, man. Vegas, if Vegas plays their best game, I think the series is over. But if Vegas doesn't bring their best game, Vancouver will beat them.
Yeah.
And Vancouver can beat them twice. Like, I'm watching the game. I'm like, are people seeing this? Like, Vancouver was just dominating. They were fast all over the ice. They were on the puck. You know, as Peter Laviolette would say, their knees were bent. They were frothing from the mouth the whole game. I watched that team. Listen, I know a lot of Vancouver fans get all over me because I picked Vegas and they're like, you're not giving Vancouver enough credit. I'm giving them credit. They dominated last game, but can they keep that up? And that remains to be seen. They got to win two games. Vegas has to win one. So you got to keep that in mind. And I'm sticking with Vegas.
It seems like all the pressure will be on Vegas if they do force a game seven there. And lastly, we'll just touch on this before we wrap up our sports segment of the podcast. Our Raptors down 0-2. Come on now. Boston, young team,
like
playing
lights
out.
Worst lead in sports is a 2-0 lead. If the Raptors turn it on, it's over in six.
All right. You heard it here.
The Raptors win one game, they're winning three more. There's no question. They just got to get the ball rolling. A lot of things been going on.
Yeah.
I think they're going to settle it down. No excuses for our team. But like I said, worst lead in sports, 2-0 lead.
You know what I see? A lot of these young teams, 2-0 lead. A lot of these young teams, right, who are in the bubble,
yep,
have the benefit of not having an audience. And I think
it's huge. I think that's why Vancouver.
You're playing a locker room game.
That's what I'm saying. There's no home ice advantage. They don't have to go to Vegas and hear the drums banging. And
yep.
No, they just go out and they play their game.
Yep.
And listen to me. I'm sorry. Vancouver was definitely the better team. It was a low scoring game. If they can play with that composure and not let the moment get too big for them,
yeah,
Vegas is in trouble. Dallas, I think, listen, as much as Dallas got blown out, Dallas going to turn it on. You're going to see Dallas's best game next game. So make no question about it. I knew that Colorado was going to come with their best game, and I said I expected Dallas to, but when you're up 3-1, it's tough to match that desperation.
Yeah.
I think they're going to match it in game six. Listen, you know how I feel about Colorado. I love that team. I'd love to see them move on.
Yeah, you said they could take it all, yeah.
But I'm looking at Dallas, and I think Pavelski, Perry, they're bringing their best game. Bringing their best game next game.
Well,
so
we'll find out here in a couple days. I think, you know, when fans listen to this, they'll know where your head's at.
And hold on. Islanders, Philly, if Carter Hart stands on his head, there's going to be a game seven.
All right.
So I'm calling, if Carter Hart is Carter Hart in game six, there will be a game seven. But those Islanders, I got them picked to win that series. So let's go. All right. He spent 12 years in the NHL and became one of the most legendary New York Rangers ever, both on and off the ice. After hockey, he interned at Vogue, became an advertising mogul, wrote a best-selling memoir, and took on Hollywood with roles in several big movies like Patriots Day, Mile 22, and Christopher Nolan's upcoming Tenet, which is a must-see, and Lindsay and I are definitely going to go see that in Jersey. Now he has his own podcast, No Gruffs Given. Fans, you already know what the name of his podcast is. Available to stream and download anywhere you listen to podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Sean Avery. Sean, thanks for being with me today, and welcome to the Ugly Duck Podcast.
I appreciate you having me. I think we kind of joked around a little bit. I think what's interesting, and I got to give you a lot of credit, PK, is like, you know, clearly we know the relationship that I have with the New Jersey Devils, right? And it's and I got to tell you, it's funny. Like, I've started this whole thing doing the play-by-play on Instagram, and Islander fans are now my friends, right? Like, because I like the pesky Islanders. And I think what's similar between the two of us is like, we're men, you know, like we're entertainers. We understand that some things that happen on the ice doesn't define who a man is. And like I said, you'll probably take a little bit of heat for doing this, but hopefully everybody understands 10 years later, it's water under the bridge. And by the way, if the New Jersey Devils become a great team and next year I'm riding the Devils wave in the playoffs, I'll cheer for the Devils. Like I just like watching quality hockey. So anyways, I wanted to thank you for having me on, because I think most people wouldn't have the nerve or the gusto to do it. And I want you to also congratulate you to the podcast world, because
you guys
are doing a great job and it's fun. You know, you see, and it's a lot of work. I'm sure you've realized how much more work you thought
it is. Dude, yeah. You're spot on. And first of all, listen, I started this podcast to have very, very interesting people on. I wanted to provide my fan base and fans that are listening and watching insight that they wouldn't find anywhere else, right? And I mean, listen, anybody that listens to your podcast is going to get a different view than anywhere else that they listen to a podcast. We get that. But listen, you are one of the top people on the list to have coming on the show. So I'm happy we got you. But hold on. Aves, we're talking hockey a little bit. Have you been watching a lot of hockey a little bit? And who are you betting on right now to win the Stanley Cup in the playoffs?
I mean, honestly, I got to tell you, is like when I watch the Islanders play, what it reminds me of, reminds me of the game 10 years ago. Reminds me of teams that had balanced teams, mm-hmm. where your third and fourth line on any given night, they were the line that was going to win the game. And I think when you look at, like, I was on the Leaf bandwagon, and like I was a Toronto Maple Leaf fan growing up. I wanted the Leafs to win this year. The Leafs disappointed me because they didn't bring that type of element that the Islanders are bringing. And clearly it's coming from their head coach, Barry Trotz, who you played for. I don't know the man, but like, he just looks like the best. He looks like a guy that you would run through a wall for. Mm-hmm. And he's got that team playing real hockey. And, you know, when they come up, possibly let's say they play Vegas, and Vegas looks good. But I just think the Islanders right now are built for a Stanley Cup win based on 7-game series and 2 more rounds, mind you. I mean, we still got a lot of hockey to go. So I love watching them play. I really do.
No. And I agree with you. You hit the nail right on the head when you said 10 years ago, the Islanders looked like a team that would fit in very, very well in the NHL 10 years ago from top to bottom. And I agree with you. We had Chris Pronger on last week, and I was talking about the same thing. He enjoys watching the Islanders play as well. So, and I agree with everything about Barry Trotz. It seems that everywhere he goes, players want to run through a wall for him. So I do have the Islanders coming out of this series with Philly, and they are a great team to watch. Okay, so Sean, pivoting for a second. Jacob Blake shooting. What did you make of the NHL taking a pause in solidarity with the Jacob Blake shooting? Did you like that? Did you not like it? Was it good enough for you?
You know, yeah, it was good enough for me. I mean, I think it's like, I don't look at these things as I'm not a barometer for what's right and what's wrong. Like, what I feel like I'm a barometer for is conversation and honesty. And, you know, I said on my podcast this morning, like, I was disappointed. Like, when I woke up that Thursday and we didn't have hockey that night, I was disappointed. Like, I was selfishly thinking, like, I want to sit on the couch with my son Nash tonight and watch a game. And then what happened was I read this article in the New York Times on Breonna Taylor. Mm-hmm. And in the article, they referenced a video of a kid from 3 years ago who he got pulled over by police. I believe he was in Louisville, maybe.
You sent me the video and I watched it.
Yeah. Yep. And like, It was a very disturbing video where white cops pulled over a black kid that was driving his mom's car. And, you know, they taunted him and they interrogated him, and they went through a song and dance that made me feel so uncomfortable and so angry. And I think to myself, okay, why did I see this today? Because I don't normally read the New York Times. And what it did was it kind of put me in the position of like, okay, why are we taking these 2 days off? And somehow I started to reflect on, what does this mean? Not on like, did they do it too late? Should they have done it at all? Who was the guys taking the charge? This is why I think we're taking a moment. And as long as we're being honest that like, we don't know everything and this doesn't feel normal to us. And one other thing that I think was very interesting, I saw NHL on NBC. Mm-hmm. They were promoting a YouTube channel that they have for diversity. And it was Anson Carter interviewing Daryl Nurse on the Oilers. And they were talking about where Nurse gets his haircut in Edmonton. And I was like, this is unbelievable. You know what I mean? And as a white guy, I feel a little bit weird even saying this right now, but like, black guys get their haircuts by general barbers that know how to cut black hair.
Correct. Right? Correct.
Like, and for me to say that and feel uncomfortable out loud, I realize that. Right. But I have to say it because I'm naive and I'm being honest and like, I don't know these things. So the fact that something like that little piece of snippet came out of the behind the scenes YouTube channel, when Shattenkirk said, we don't want our brothers to ever feel uncomfortable. And I think that's what this whole thing comes down to. We are a team. We're all teammates. Okay. We're in this together. And for the guys to say like, we don't want our black brothers to feel uncomfortable. And maybe that's why they did it. And if that's why they did it, that's a good enough reason to me. It's totally something that we've never had any real contact with. And like, we have to learn. And the only way that you can learn is by having these conversations. And no, that's it.
You're spot on. And you know what, Abes, to be honest with you, you know, I've had a ton of experiences, not even just in hockey, but in my life. And the reality is that with this issue, for us to move forward, and this is when you talk about honesty, because I want to break that down for a second. Being honest is also being honest with yourself and understanding the place of where you're coming from. Like, if I take this opportunity to really help grow the game, grow society, give back in a way that brings people together, then I don't use this platform to rectify issues that people have had with me in the past or things that people have done with me. That's being honest. That's honesty. So that's got to be my contribution as a black hockey player, as a black man, as a black person. That's got to be my contribution to society. And I think that that's where it's got to come from, because that's where the uncomfortable part comes from, is that it's not, listen, the conversation can be had. People can sit and talk about whatever they want, but it's understanding where people are coming from that's important. So I agree with you, Sean. Listen, with the Black Lives Matter movement happening, and people call it a movement, I don't really see it as a movement, because to me, Black Lives Matter is really what black people live every day. It's not a movement. Like, I wake up in the morning, I don't choose to be black. I am black. So regardless of what I do or what my profession is, you know, that's what we live every day. There's the pandemic. Go ahead.
No, I want to say something to that, because it's interesting. When I think about these things and issues, I immediately think about my own personal experience. And what I say is like, I've got a new son, right? I've got a new son that probably is eventually going to become a hockey player, you know, chances are. And I think in my mind, like, okay, if I'm a dad on a team and I'm in the stands and I ever heard a white parent make a comment about one of the black kids on the team, like for me personally, I nip that in the bud right away. Like, I get up and I address that with whoever said it. And what I don't understand is that not everybody is like me, right? And things can fester, and that sort of like the me getting angry that people don't just address stuff and say, like, you can't do that. And why do you think that this is okay? And why are we not all talking about it? The fact that I sort of get upset sometimes that not everyone in the room is as, I guess, abrasive or challenging or ornery or willing to address things, like,
yes,
things get lost and things, you know, boil down underneath. And then you get to this tipping point, you know, because I don't think people in hockey are racist. You know, I don't.
Isn't it culture also, though? Because I think that sometimes it's not so much that somebody can be a racist, it's culture. Like, sometimes people grow up in environments where that's taught to be okay. Like, if you grow up in a household where your parents speak like that all the time, then you go to a locker room and you speak that way, you think it's okay. So I think it's also culture, because we can't also rely on the fact that all parents do a great job. Not all parents do a great job, right? Not all parents do take the time, like yourself, Sean, to sit down with your child and teach them what's right and what's wrong, or how to treat people, or how to be comfortable in making sure that you understand that regardless of anybody's religion, culture, their views, the color of their skin, that you have to treat them with respect. Not everybody understands that, Sean. Not everybody's taught that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing too, which is the other issue, is like, when I look at the police, right? And I'm living in New York right now. New York City is falling apart. New York City is a dangerous place to live, regardless of what de Blasio or Cuomo or any political person says. New York is dangerous right now. People are like, oh, you bash cops. You don't support the police. I want more police. I want police everywhere. But I want police that are physically fit, that are mentally sound, that can move on their feet quickly, that can make decisions, that can arrest criminals and not pull their guns out and empty a clip into them because they're not physically fit enough to chase a guy till he just gets tired, or arrest a criminal. White, black, purple, yellow, it doesn't matter. I'm talking about criminals. I'm talking about people that are supposed to be following the law that don't follow the law. And I, you know, that's where I'm also disappointed, where I like the movement and I wish it was a little bit more focused on, like, let's make these police accountable, but not like, you know, let's not defund the police. Like, I don't understand that. Like, we need law and order. That's what I think.
You know what? Listen, I think that there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of things that need to be answered. There's a lot of areas where people are still uncomfortable and we have to work through those areas. You know, Sean, so like I was saying, with everything with Black Lives Matter, the pandemic, you know, there's a ton of division in politics. All these issues are making their way into professional sports and changing the industry dramatically. Obviously, you know, the way athletes are perceived now is different than it's ever been. How do you think the leagues are handling it in general? NHL, NBA, like, how do you feel about the way that players and athletes have used their platform?
Well, I got to tell you, I think that the NHL players, first and foremost, and I don't think people have taken a moment to give them credit. Mm-hmm. These guys are working hard and they are putting a product out on the ice that is superior. Considering the circumstances, no fans, fact that they aren't seeing their families, the fact that, you know, they have to get tested and it's this constant, like, I want to give them kudos and make sure that these guys, and I think everyone should start doing it a little bit more, give them credit for how hard they're playing. And, you know, the couple hours every night of entertainment that they're providing people right now is valuable. I think that the NHL left the players and the teams out to dry a little bit on that Wednesday. I think that there was things moving happening quickly that should have been addressed. And hold I think on, also Sean, the teams need to.
I got a question on that, Sean, because, you know, listen, I don't think also, I think people are very quick to jump to conclusions now today as well. Like, I felt that when the Milwaukee Bucks decided not to play that game because they wanted to make a statement about everything that was going on, I don't think people really understood that when they went on strike and said, listen, we're not playing, and the other teams follow suit, that it wasn't the NBA that postponed the game. It was the players that initiated that, right? And I think I think the NHL, like, I actually don't have a, listen, the players played. I'm not even sure all the players knew what was going on. Like, who knows? Like, I can't speak, I can't sit here in a microphone and speak for the 150 players that played that night. Like, I can't do that. Maybe they didn't know. Maybe they did. But what I look at is when the players were asked about it, I go back. I go way, way back to when all of this started. And, you know, George Floyd was murdered.
Yep.
And I remember how the NHL players, like, Aves, I've been in the league now for 10 years or 11 years pro. There was never a moment in the NHL where I was more proud of my peers and my teammates and the guys that I play with than that moment. I posted every single post, every tweet that the NHL put out, every post they put on the Instagram, every quote from every player I posted on my Instagram account because I wanted them to know that I'm like, guys, this is a great start. So when everybody was so quick, you know, and I don't think that was fair. I didn't think that was fair, to be honest with you.
No, but and also, you know, as I'm starting to think about this, like, everybody moves, men, us, we move at our own pace. Like, like, you can't just hit a buzzer and all of a sudden make every guy universally comfortable standing up and saying, this is my position. Like, I think you have to, you know, it's got to come to everybody naturally, and everyone needs a moment to just kind of soak the information in. But I do think that all of the players have, as you said, like, when I saw these guys talking, there was sincerity behind what they were saying.
100%.
Like they don't have all the answers figured out, but I saw a bunch of guys standing up there and saying, you know what? This doesn't feel right to us.
And no one does. No one has all the answers, Abe, right?
Right. Right. But then Shattenkirk again saying, like, if our brothers feel uncomfortable. And I also think it's so beautiful to, like, when Shattenkirk or a bunch of white hockey players refer to their teammates, black teammates, as brothers. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. Like, there's something poetic about that. Like, yeah, you are my brother. And I'm using that maybe in a racially, like, wrong way or culturally inappropriate, but I don't know. That feels strong to me. I feel like connected by calling you my brother. And maybe I'm in trouble by saying this, but I'm just telling you, there's something that feels like now I'm sort of in it with you. You know what I mean?
No.
I don't know.
Dude, you are spot on. And first of all, just to touch on Kevin Shattenkirk for a second, for people that don't know, and I don't want to speak for Kevin Shattenkirk at all, but I'm just going to take a stab in the dark here. Whether you know about Kevin Shattenkirk and how he grew up or not, Kevin Shattenkirk played in St. Louis with Ryan Reeves, right? They played together in St. Louis. So I believe there was probably more of a comfort level. And this is to the point that I want to tell people, is that people are uncomfortable and scared of what they don't understand. Like, listen, the NBA is 99% black, right? The NHL is 90% white. So we might have a lot of players in the league that don't know what the next step is to do the right thing, right? That are focused on playing hockey and are like, hey, listen, I support everything that's going on, but what do I have to do? Because I don't understand. Well, if I'm going to them and pointing the finger and yelling and screaming and saying, you got to do this and do that, I don't think that really helps the situation. So we need to also educate people that don't know. Just because you don't know, it doesn't make you a racist. It doesn't make you this. It's like, and that's the comfort level that we have to get to. But it's also this too. We're in the day and age now where everybody has a platform. Everybody has a voice. And in some ways it's great. In some ways it's not great because everybody can speak on every issue. And not all people are equipped and educated enough and intelligent enough to speak on every issue, but everybody's got a platform. Everybody's got resources to gain a platform so that people can hear their voice. And there's positives and negatives to that. Sean,
one other thing, I think, you know, we're also in a day and age where this cancel culture makes people afraid, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, like every time you open your mouth, you have to be very careful because the mob can come after you. And that was honestly, it's funny. Like, one of the reasons I started the podcast in my head my podcast was, I'm starting a platform that's going to give me a tool to defend myself when they come for me, because they're coming for me at some point, who knows when, but you know, I'm going to build this so that it gives me the ability in a long form to always defend myself. But I think people don't understand, like, guys are afraid, guys are gun shy. Guys are like, you know, you're taking a big risk by saying things, and that's not easy. And I think people have to understand and be, you know, like you're saying, we have to just get that and cut everyone a little bit of slack sometimes.
100%. And listen, you've been outspoken in your career. You've been very comfortable doing that. Do you think athletes have the right to speak their mind in regards to politics? Do you think they have the right to do that?
Yeah, like this Logan Couture thing. That is a fundamental fabric of America. I mean, you know, do I think that they should? I don't really think it's great for a team environment. You have to understand, like,
there's a lot of guys with different political views.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think you're somewhat, that's a selfish choice, because you always have to be a good teammate, right? And you have to respect your teammates. And I just think that maybe that's something, do it in the off season, or, you know, but I do think that athletes absolutely have the right. And for some reason, we've become a country where now all of a sudden you can't support somebody politically, which is, you know, it's just, it's like crazy. And I'm openly, like, I can't vote, right? I'm married to an American, but I haven't got my citizenship yet. So I can't even vote. But what I can do is I can say, you know what, Joe Biden, I saw this video yesterday. This guy can't even get through. He loses his train of thought, like the wind passes him. And I could also say, like, listen, I don't like how Trump won't admit things when he needs to admit them that will affect him. Like small little things that I don't like about both candidates. But that doesn't mean that I am supporting one or taking a position. I'm just throwing things. I'm having a conversation. That's my observation. But to say that athletes can't, that's like saying you can't talk about what it feels like to have a black teammate. There's no difference. Like, you have to talk about these things because that's how you learn and that's how you understand them. So, but do I recommend it? I think that's where it gets into a gray area, because you always have responsibilities to be a good teammate. And maybe politics should be left out of the conversation.
100%. Aves, you were one of the first athletes, as far as I can remember, to really speak your mind. You were one of the only, if not maybe there were more, but as far as I remember, you were one of the first athletes to support same-sex marriages in 2011. Do you think it's harder today to speak your mind than ever before? It's harder?
Yeah, I do. I mentioned the whole cancel culture. Like, yeah. You know, when guys have endorsements, when guys have, you know, aspirations outside of the game, right? We've almost created a society where it's not worth it. It's not worth starting conversations. It's not worth trying to debate, a healthy debate. It's not worth taking that risk because you have so much to lose. If we create this environment in sports where guys just stay silent, that's the exact opposite of what we're trying to get guys to do. It defeats the whole purpose of what guys were doing with the movement last week. Like, you want people to start these conversations. You want debates. Healthy debates are... it's a beautiful thing. It doesn't mean somebody's cemented or in one position. So yeah, that's frustrating to me. And, you know, I think the only reason that I felt so comfortable I guess I was the first professional athlete in the Big Four to openly support same-sex marriage. The only reason I was able to do that, and you'll see, like, Jim Dolan, our owner, the New York Rangers, he let me do that. You know, he let me wear a New York Ranger jersey in that PSA. And I was comfortable enough to even approach the team and say, hey, I want to do this. And I knew, because Mr. Dolan, I think, is one of the best owners in sports as far as being open-minded and like takes after his players, takes care of them, I had the support of an organization. And I knew that making that decision wasn't going to, you know, end my career, wasn't going to get me sent to the minors. Like, it gave me the ability to. And that's a long time ago. That was, you know, that's 10, 15 years ago. So it's tough, man. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't silence guys and then want them to speak when you want them to speak. You can't have it both ways.
I love that. Aves, let's talk about your career a little bit, because I just got to play against you the last couple of years of your career. You're not afraid of controversy. I'm not afraid of controversy either. You like to trash talk. I'm not as good as trash talking as you are. You know, I trash talk a little bit, but I'm not very good at it. I'm better off playing and keeping my mouth shut, to be honest. Did you ever cross the line at any point in your career? Did you ever have a moment where you said something and you're like, damn it, I shouldn't have said that?
No, it's funny. Like, I mean, yeah, obviously we know one situation that, you know, I think when you become a father, okay.
Yes.
Everything changes, and like your perspective on everything changes. And, you know, so that right there, that moment, when I think about that, being a father now, you know, before I could say like, I regret saying that, I shouldn't have said that. You can say that, and it's somewhat lip service, but like,
right,
things change now. You know, it could be my daughter, not my son. So that's one thing. Now, one thing that I never did, I never went after alcoholism. I never went after, you know, substance abuse. I never went after, I guess those were probably, that was like the one thing that was off limits to me. Like, you know, everything else, like, listen, if a guy, you know, family stuff, like, yeah, if a guy had a brother that I didn't like, or a guy had a sister that I didn't like, or, you know, I knew that a guy, yeah, I mean, you know, family was, you know, there were some things that were definitely like, I never made a joke to anyone. I never went after a guy for having issues like with the bottle, or maybe he's had a pass. That stuff, you know, that's just not cool, right? But everything else was pretty much on the table for the most part. And
well said. Well said. What's the biggest misconception of you, Aves? Like, I never got to play with you. I know a lot of people that are friends with you that love you. What's the biggest misconception about you?
I think that I was a dirty player on the ice, which I'll tell you, like, that's obviously the eyes and the beholder, but I never got suspended for an on ice infraction. Like, I never got suspended for hitting a guy from behind, or, you know, running a guy, blindsiding a guy. Like, I was dirty, but I was almost dirty to your face. Like, if I came up into a pile, you're going to feel my stick on the back of your shins, or I'm going to two-hand you in the back of the legs.
Yes.
But I'm standing in front of you the moment after I do it. I'm not doing it in kind of like, you always knew where the chaos was coming from. I wasn't a cheap shot artist in that, like, that hit the other night with Richie on Boston.
Yes.
Like, I didn't hit guys like that. I would time it better. I would hit guys... I didn't, because also I always knew I had a short leash on the ice, right? Like, anything that I did, everyone was trying to catch me, the refs, the other team. So, you know, I think that's a big misconception, that I was a dirty player. Like, and maybe I'm living in a delusional world, but I think the stats show I wasn't a dirty player. I was a mean and nasty, and like, I took some liberties, but I wasn't like a dirty player. I get weirded out when I hear that, or I see a hit like Richie the other night. I mean, that hit was like, man, you can't hit guys like that. Hit him head on. So yeah, that was one of them. I think, you know, also that I was that I was a bad teammate. You know, like I think there were things that I did that I could have been a nicer teammate to some of my teammates, but I would be the first guy into a pile to protect anyone on my team. I would take a bullet for any of my teammates. So that's kind of how I measure, like, what's the real heart of a guy being a good teammate? Will he go to war with his brothers? Yeah, I think I was good. And you could always count on me in that department. But, you know, did I say some things to guys over the years where I was just young and like, I'm a shit talker. That's what I do. I talk shit always. I always have been. So does that make you a bad teammate? I don't think so.
Well, and also, Aves, let's touch on this and be real. You know that in the one thing that I think you and I both share is that when you're opinionated and you are your own person and you have different views, you dress a certain way, you talk a certain way, you play a certain way.
A lot of jealousy.
Well, and there's culture to hockey as well, right? And Maybe that culture's changed. I think it's more accepted now for guys to feel comfortable in their own skin. But, you know, listen, there was a little bit of that going on as well. People are jealous, you know, so it is what it is. Let's talk about the Avery rule.
Yeah.
Looking back, do you have any regrets about how you played then? I loved
it. So every time that we played Marty that year, he's so smart, you know, like the guy is, he knows his space, right? Like there's no one of the best with his area. Every time I go to the front of the net, he'd tap me in the back of the legs. He'd take his stick and he'd push the back of my knees. And you know, that's like the most vulnerable spot for a hockey player. The moment you do that, you go like ass over tea kettle. So I would fall into Marty. Marty would, you know, he'd sell it and I'd get a penalty. So this happened like five or six times over the course of the season. Okay. Now we're in the playoffs. It's a 5-on-3. I'm on the ice for the power play. I got Jágr, Shanahan, Drury, Gomez. Jágr and Shanahan are at the tops of the circles, off wing, one-timers. And I'm going to the front of the net. And I'm thinking to myself, Sean, you take a penalty, I'll kill you. It's like, you know, the DiCaprio scene when he goes in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he goes in and he screams at himself for forgetting his lines. That was like me in my head. Like, if you take a penalty, I'll kill you. I'll kill you, Sean, like me, third person. So I go to the front of the net and I said, I'm not going to turn around because if he pokes my legs and I fall into him, well, then you're going to have to do something to yourself, Sean. You don't want to do that. So I went to him and I looked him dead in the eyes. And there was a moment where I was like, okay, I'm staring at Marty and the play's behind me. And then he kind of just like turned his head. And it just hit me. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And he goes this way. I'm going to go that way with my hand. And I'm going to screen him that way. And two things in my head. I was thinking, please don't hit me in the back of the spine with one of your one-timers, Shanahan or Jágr. Because, like, I don't know what happens. Your spine, you never think about getting hit with a shot in your spine. And the other thing, I had Drury yelling in the corner and Koharski yelling in the other corner. You know, he's like, Drew's like, he's going to give you a penalty. He's going to give you a penalty. He's yelling at you. And I'm like, Drew, I can hear him. He's right here. I know. And we had this weird slow motion conversation while everything's going on. And, you know, then like 20 seconds later, Gomez gets the puck down low and he passes to me and I score. And it was just kind of one of those insane New York Ranger, Madison Square Garden moments. And the best part was when I went home to bed and I woke up in the morning, they had already changed the rule, which, you know, to this day is wildly illegal. Like, I believe you can only change rules in the summer at the Board of Governors meetings. I think that, I don't know. I don't know. I've never asked anyone, but they just changed the rule. Overnight.
You are something else.
And they called the rule the Avery rule, which is like, I don't know.
Oh man. You had a 12-year career in the NHL, scoring 90 goals, 247 points, and 1,533 penalty minutes in just 580 games. You led the league in penalty minutes twice during the 2003-04 and 2005-06 seasons. Looking back, do you think you would have done anything differently, or did it all go the way it was supposed to, Sean?
I mean, I think everything always goes the way it's supposed to, but I think, what could I have told myself? Play more, focus on playing more. Yeah, possibly, but also it was a different league then, and you had to really own your space, and to find your space, you had to, it's not like today's game. Like today's game, if I was playing in today's game, it'd be heaven on earth, because I could skate, I could pass, I could shoot, and I could skate. So you don't, as a small guy, you don't have to, when I came into the league in 2002, I was one of the smallest guys in the league. It was a big league. Chris Pronger, Darian Hatcher, mm-hmm. like, you know, Hal Gill, guys on defense that were, every team had a Zdeno Chara. And it was just a different time. And like, yeah, I would have definitely done something, a few things different, that's for sure. But I also think you can't live with regrets. You just have to keep moving forward and get it done.
Oh, 100%. Abes, what was the highlight of your career?
I think my first year watching, you know, that 2002 Red Wing team, and just when I think about that whole season and, you know, that team, how good that team was, watching some of probably maybe one of the greatest NHL teams ever in the history of the league play together, watching Steve Yzerman win a cup on one leg, Hasek, Scotty Bowman, like that collectively, individual moments to me are, you know, I don't know what they are. They're things, they're moments, yes. But that was like a life lesson. You know, that was like a year of my life that shaped who I became or who I aspired to be. You know, some of those guys were legends, legendary men, you know, it was fun.
100%. What can you tell fans out there about Chris Nolan's Tenet movie?
Oh my God. Yeah. I saw it last night in IMAX. I drove to Danbury, Connecticut, cause New York City, the theaters are closed. It's a movie that I think if you love movies, if you love action movies, it basically makes a James Bond movie look like a Lego movie. Like it's the biggest, baddest, meanest scale movie I've ever seen. And I'm also in it, which, you know, kind of is cool. And, you know, it was also interesting, like watching John David Washington, who's a former professional athlete who, you know, is now the leading man, a black man in probably maybe the most expensive movie ever made. And who knows how much money this movie's going to make, because it's going to be in the theaters for months. It's playing on every screen in every theater. It was an interesting process making that movie. Also watching a guy like JD who, like, you know, thought he was going to be an athlete and then decided, you know what? I think there's something else in my heart. And he went in a totally different direction. And the guy's a workhorse. The guy's just a workhorse. One of the hardest working dudes I've seen on a set. A great guy, loves to have fun. He's like a teammate, you know, really when you kind of, he's like one of the boys. He's got that history. So yeah, it's a fun movie. And I think everybody should go and see it. Try and see it in the theaters. It's loud. You won't have any idea what's happening. But I think Nolan said it in an interview. Just feel it. Don't think too hard. Sit back. Just watch the movie and go for a ride type of thing.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it. And so can't Lindsay. Best advice you have ever received?
Never take a yellow taxi. Brendan Shanahan told me that in 2002 on our first road trip to New York City. And you know, I think he was telling me it for a different reason. Like, you know, you're better than that now. Like, you're in the big time. You're in the show. You don't take a yellow cab. And now
I love it.
The idea of, like, taking a yellow cab has morphed into so many different reasons why not to. Yeah. Yeah, that was, I'll never forget when he said it, where he said it, how he said it. It was a beautiful thing.
You heard it here, folks. Never take a yellow taxi. Sean Avery, thank you so much for coming on the Ugly Duck podcast. This is definitely going to be at the top of our list in terms of episodes so far. You are truly who I thought you were, and that's a versatile human being with multiple interests. And I think that I hope that a lot of athletes that are watching this, not specific individuals, but specifically athletes that are watching this, take something from it, because I think it's very, very important for athletes not to look at themselves as just basketball players or hockey players, to look at yourselves as someone that plays basketball and that plays hockey, because one day your career will be over. And if you have other interests, you should cater to those interests. You can still be a great hockey player and have an impact. Sean has had a great career and still be able to do all the things that you want to do. I'm definitely going to go and watch the movie Tenet, 100%. Very proud of you. I know you're a family man now. You have your son, Nash. Hockey's back on, so get on the couch, watch the game. Big games coming up in the NHL, but it's always a pleasure having speaking to you and listening to you. And definitely, dude, I got to come on your podcast now to return the favor.
I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, I want to have a nice conversation with you at some point because, yeah, I mean, you're doing the same thing and you're still playing. And I think it's just good stuff, man. I really appreciate it. I like talking.
No problem. All the Ugly Duck fans, Subaniacs watching, Sean Avery, the one and only, and Chris O'Sullivan says hello.
Yep, that's our boy. That's our boy. We'll always be bonded by Sully, no matter what.
All right, Aves. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you to my guest, the one and only Sean Avery, for joining me on the show. Check out his podcast, No Gruffs Given, on Apple Podcasts now. Be sure to check back next week for another episode of the Ugly Duck podcast. It's getting better every week. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe wherever you can listen to podcasts. And be sure to like and subscribe on YouTube as well. This is the Subinator, another episode. Subinator out. Yeah.